Welcome to Time After Time,
a non-sponsored, highly judgmental podcast about time travel
and love
and friendship
and the movies that bring them together into our living rooms.
I'm Helena.
And I'm Paige.
And maybe in an alternate timeline, you've already listened to this podcast
and you loved it.
Let's go.
Castle Guard, it's a quiet village, except for one night when there is a battle.
Castle Guard, full of dead people. They're all dead because they're always killing each other.
You're losing the melody a little bit.
You know what? It's fine. The time slots will forgive me.
Bonjour, Hirsay, Pussy, Poho. What happens after the people yell bonjour?
That one guy is like, do you want a book, Belle? And she's like, yes. And he's like, another book?
And then they're like,
you can have that weird one. She really is a funny girl, Belle.
There you go. So if we were like, it really is a funny machine, that 3D fax thing they're doing.
Now we're really losing the thread. Yeah.
We started off well, though.
We did good.
Don't worry, you'll get all those references.
Yeah, it'll all make sense member soon.
After we go through our very convoluted summary.
You know, I feel like we used to do these songs, and it used to be like mostly about the title, and we've maybe lost that a little bit okay. In favor of like the theme, which I'm not mad at. I'm just saying it's different.
Okay, so do you have something you want to do with the word timeline?
Time after timeline.
I feel like that's cheap.
That's cheap.
If I could turn back the timeline, if I could find my way, I'd take back all the timelines that had hurt you, and more people would live. A lot of people die in this movie.
So many people die in this movie. I was really surprised. They are not afraid to kill your favorite characters.
Yeah, Francois was my favorite character.
Same.
I knew he was destined for death.
I was so sad because I literally wrote down, honestly, I love Francois.
Same. I wrote
moments before he died.
As soon as they were like, as they convinced Francois to go, I was like, I love Francois. He's going to die. And then he gave the physicist the $50 that he owed him. And I was like, he's going to die. And he knows he's going to die.
Yeah. But we should probably let them know about Francois before we really start talking about him.
Yeah. This week's movie is
Timeline.
It's a 2003, like, real film full of, like, a lot of people who you actually know.
Yeah, but you probably don't know this film because it seems that it did not do very well.
No.
Should we summarize it?
Yes, we shall. We open on a random man dying in the desert. At the hospital, the doctors talk about how this random man's veins and all of his inside parts were in slightly wrong places. Someone from the guy's company, ITC, comes to collect his body. It's all very ominous. Without warning, we cut to an archaeological dig site in Castle Guard, France, where Professor Edward Johnston, played by Billy Connolly, is leading a dig near Le Roque Castle. The professor is explaining the site's significance to some tourists. And also to the audience. In 1357, it was the site of a big battle in the Hundred Years' War when the French were able to take back the castle from the English. The French were apparently motivated to win this battle when they saw that the English had executed a French noblewoman, Lady Clare, by hanging her from the castle walls.
After this tidy exposition, we meet some other archaeologists on the site, including Andre Merrick, played by Gerard Butler, Kate Erickson, played by Frances O'Connor, Josh Stern, and Francois Dantel. We also meet the professor's son, Chris, played by the late Paul Walker, who is apparently just chilling at the dig site, ostensibly helping his dad, but mainly just creeping on Kate, who he is openly very into. His dad expresses to him that the dig sponsor, ITC, has been acting suspicious, and so he's going to talk to them at their headquarters in America.
A few days after the professor leaves, Kate and Merrick are exploring a nearby monastery and discover the professor's glasses and a 650-year-old note begging for help in the professor's handwriting. The whole team heads to the ITC headquarters to get some answers.
At the headquarters, the president, Robert Doniger, and vice president, Stephen Kramer, of ITC, explained to the group that they were trying to create a 3D fax machine and accidentally created a wormhole. Now, the big fax machine can send things and people back in time, but only to 1357 France. They explained that the professor wanted to go check it out, so they sent him off with their military slash time travel guy, Frank Gordon, but only Frank returned. They explained that they now need the group of archaeologists to help them get the professor back.
Frank Gordon, I will say, I didn't put this in there, is played by Neil McDonough, I think his name is, that is how you pronounce his name. And I only care about that because I was like, I know this man. And I did some extensive research and he had a recurring role on Suits.
Oh.
The Meghan Markle
throwback vehicle. Meghan Markle.
Chris, Kate, Marek, and Francois head back with Frank and two of his military buddies. Josh Stern is the only one who stays behind, rationally afraid to have his molecules faxed through a wormhole. They all have marker necklaces that they can squeeze to come back, but there's a 6-hour deadline before the markers stop working. Almost immediately upon arrival in 1357, they are attacked by English knights. One of the military buddies is hit by a bunch of arrows and tries to throw a grenade and press his marker to go back at the same time, causing him to arrive back in 2003, just in time to blow up the lab and the time machine with the grenade.
Perfect storm.
Now in 2003, there's going to be a race to put the machine back together before the 6-hour deadline, because otherwise, if the group in 1357 squeezes their markers, nothing will happen because there's no machine for them to come back to.
Meanwhile, in 1357, the other military buddy is also killed by the knights, so now it's just Chris, Kate, Merrick, Francois, and Frank. Just those people. No one else. While hiding from the knights, Merrick encounters a young French woman, played by Anna Friel, who is also hiding. All six of them are captured by the knights. The woman is taken off somewhere separately, and Chris, Kate, Merrick, Francois, and Frank are all brought to the guy in charge, Lord Oliver, played by Michael Sheen. Lord Oliver immediately kills Francois because he assumes that he's a French spy. R.I.P. Francois.
Yeah, I was going to say, rest in peace, our favorite guy.
The rest of them are imprisoned in an attic room where they find the professor also imprisoned. Reunion! The professor reveals that Lord Oliver spared his life because he promised to create Greek fire for him.
Don't worry, I will later explain to you what Greek fire is.
I assumed you would.
The movie doesn't really.
They're like, you know medieval stuff, don't you?
Thanks to Kate's climbing skills, they are all able to escape. Merrick veers off to help the young Frenchwoman escape. The professor and Frank are recaptured. Chris and Kate end up escaping to the nearby monastery. Merrick helps the young Frenchwoman escape, and they head back towards the French knights by way of the river. Also somewhere in there, they all try to go back to 2003 using their markers and realize that they're no longer working. Also, Chris and Kate make out in front of everyone before Kate helps them all escape, so now they're, like, together, I guess? At least for the next 6 hours, I don't.
Merrick and the young Frenchwoman make it to the French knights, led by the woman's brother, Arnaud de Cerveau. There, Merrick realizes that the Frenchwoman is Lady Claire, and he has accidentally changed history by helping her escape the English. He doesn't seem super concerned about this, though, because he's clearly in love with her. He tells her brother to keep her safe and then rides off on a French loner horse to save his friends.
Maybe that's how you can get to the beach tomorrow.
He's gotta get a French loner horse. Yeah. So true.
Meanwhile, the professor and Frank are back to being held prisoner by the English. One of the head knights, now known as Decaire, reveals he's actually a former ITC employee, William Decker, that Frank left behind to die a while ago. I guess Frank just, like, loves leaving people.
It's his favorite thing. He's like, I'm a Marine.
All men left behind.
All men left behind.
William Decker also talks about how he didn't realize how much the time travel was going to mess up his DNA, and now he's afraid a return trip to 2003 would kill him. I keep saying 2003, whatever the present day is, it seems like this was maybe filmed in 2001. Just saying.
Because of the plane stuff?
No, because I read that they delayed the release of it a few times.
Oh, okay.
It was supposed to be released in 2010.
Yeah, probably because they kept trying to edit the shit out of it to make it make sense.
There was like a music issue. I'll get to it, Helena.
Okay, fine. Sorry.
But I'm just saying, I'm gonna keep saying 2003.
I think we
but
just call
assume
it
it's like the present day of the movie.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, so William Decker kills Frank as revenge for leaving him to die, I guess, and brings the professor back with him to La Roque Castle, which all the English knights have now marched to.
Meanwhile, back at the monastery, Kate is trying to find a tunnel that should lead from the monastery into La Roque Castle to give the French an advantage in the upcoming battle, because apparently they're on the side of the French. At some point, that was all decided. I don't know how that happened. As the battle starts, she succeeds and is able to bring Arnaud and his men through.
There is now a full-on battle happening at the castle. Time is flying.
Like the arrows.
Like the arrows. Lots of arrows are flying, and there's lots of fire being catapulted, because it's also somehow nighttime now.
I guess time has passed.
Yeah, but this whole thing takes place within 6 hours. It's crazy.
Yeah, I wonder when they arrived. We should walk through the timeline.
Also, at some point, very quickly, the professor made the English-Greek fire, which gives the English an advantage, but also Kate got the French inside the castle, which I guess is a better advantage because it seems like the French are winning. Also, Lady Claire is captured again, and then Merrick rescues her again, losing an ear in the process. Merrick, with one ear, is still able to kill Decaire.
I guess he's just, like, in shock. He didn't even notice the ear thing.
He really does notice the ear thing. He has a full moment.
Can't wait to talk about that moment, actually. Okay. There's, like, a minute left before the markers run out of juice. So Chris, Kate, and the professor are going to try to go home again, but Merrick tells them that he's going to stay behind to be with Lady Claire. Chris, Kate, and the professor press the button to return home.
Yeah, let's see. If we do the math here, how many people left? 7 people left. 8, including the professor earlier. And 3 of them come back. That's wild.
Yeah, their odds are not good.
Yeah. Back or forward in 2003, the machine is mostly fixed, but the president of ITC, Doniger, is worried that because it's not 100% fixed, the time travelers are going to come back deformed and make ITC look bad. So he tries to stop their return and maybe kills his vice president guy in the process. We never find out if that guy lives. I don't know. They have a fight that seems like it belongs in another movie, and then Doniger pushes the vice president, and the vice president hits his head and maybe dies. Doesn't matter. Josh Stern, the one member of the original team who stayed behind, is able to lock Doniger out of the control room and get the machine started just in time for Chris, Kate, and the professor to return. However, right before they return, Doniger runs into the machine to try to stop it, inadvertently sending himself back to 1357, where he is immediately in the middle of the battlefield and is killed.
In a slight flash forward, we see Chris, Kate, Josh, and the professor are all fine and back working at the French archaeological dig site. They finish unearthing a sarcophagus that Merrick had started excavating at the beginning, and it turns out that the dead couple lovingly holding hands in it is Merrick and Lady Claire, who seem to have lived a long and happy life together. And they had 3 children, Christopher, Catherine, and Francois.
Mwah.
Love it.
Brings us to
Blast from the Past.
This movie is based on a Michael Crichton novel of the same title, and that guy, you've heard of him. He also wrote a book that was turned into a little movie called Jurassic Park.
Just a little film.
First of all, so he offered up the movie rights for free, provided the movie entered into production immediately. Don't know why.
That doesn't make much sense. Why was he so gung-ho about turning this into a movie?
Well, he also had a back-end deal set up on the basis that that his script be used for the movie.
Oh, so he just wanted to be a screenwriter.
Maybe, but I don't know what happened because he's not the screenwriter of this movie.
Oh, what the hell?
The screenplay is by Jeff McGuire and George Nolfi. No further info.
Okay, very strange.
Except that then he hated the movie, it turned out.
I mean, you would if, like, you thought it was going to be your script and then it turned out they were like, no, fuck you.
Well, and also the movie's bad.
Well, there's also that. Yeah, sure.
He hated the movie so much that he refused to license any more movies based on his novels during his life. Nobody gained movie rights to a Michael Crichton book until he died. And then Steven Spielberg, who was his longtime friend, directed Jurassic Park, brought the rights to a book called Pirate Latitudes.
So is Spielberg going to make it into a movie or what?
In August 2009, Steven Spielberg announced his intention to adapt the novel to a film, and because apparently he really wants to make a pirate film.
I mean, who doesn't, honestly?
He hired David Cope to pen the screenplay, and DreamWorks is apparently going to produce the film, but this was all in 2009, and I haven't heard anything, so.
Yeah, I think maybe it's a no.
But maybe not. Things come back from the dead all the time.
That's true.
So the movie made, obviously, a lot of changes, particularly regarding the company, which is called ITC in the movie, and the time travel device. In the novel, people and objects could be sent to any location in time, so they weren't locked to 1357 Castle Guard, France. And also, Doniger is a much darker character, and it's hinted at that he... Any unwanted or rogue employees were given markers that could send them to places in time that they would die in, such as Pompeii or the Great Kanto Earthquake.
I don't know. That seems like a very expensive way to make your employees die. It just seems very elaborate.
Police aren't gonna follow up.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I guess there's no body, but still.
Also, in the book, his death is much darker. He doesn't die immediately. Like in the movie, he's sent to Castle Guard during the time of the Black Plague. The last chapter that he is in ends with him finding some dead bodies and starting to cough. Which is cool.
I like that. I like it.
And in the book, the characters that become Stephen Kramer, the vice president of ITC, and Jimmy Gomez, who I have no idea who that is.
Yeah, I don't know who that is either. I'm not ringing a
Maybe
bell.
Maybe he was also on the dig site.
I think he must have been, yeah.
Anyway, those characters are both female in the book.
Well, how dare they?
The movie was like, you get two women, both of whom will make out with the men.
Yeah, of course.
So some production, post-production fun facts. The battle sequences used medieval reenactors.
As the extras?
I think, like, yes, as everyone who wasn't a named character.
That's so fun.
Yeah. They wanted to limit the use of CGI as much as possible. I have a feeling that the fire was probably CGI, but I guess maybe some of the archery wasn't. Because they had reenactors. Mm-hmm. Okay, and also, so I didn't really get into... There was a lot of technical mumbo-jumbo about how the film was supposed to be released in fall 2002. It was, like, delayed for over a year. But a lot of it seems to have to do with yes, them not liking the director's edit and also the scoring. Okay. Apparently, composer Jerry Goldsmith, who had previously collaborated with the director on The Omen, completed a score for the film, his final score, before he died in 2004. But it was replaced by a different score after Donner was forced to recut the film at the insistence of Sherry Langson, the then head of Paramount Pictures.
Oh, that's unfortunate. So you couldn't go back and fix it. They were like, well, the score doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. So the final score that we see in the movie was composed by Brian Tyler, but both Goldsmith and Tyler's scores were released onto CD.
Why?
I don't know, because he died.
Who's putting that CD? Who's like, you know what I'm feeling tonight? I'm going to put on the original score of Timeline that was never released.
Yeah, you invite a friend over, have some wine, get in bed, pop that bad boy in there. Okay, so some cast and crew fun facts. So Doniger was played by a man named David Thewlis. Thewlis. Doniger was played by a man named David Thewlis. He met Anna Friel, who played Lady Claire, during the production of this movie, and they were together for about 10 years.
Aww,
and
that's
had
nice.
A daughter together before they separated in 2010.
Wait, but they weren't were they in any part of the movie together? Because she was, if he played Doniger, he was only in...
No, they met when in time the movie was being filmed, but they met on a flight to Cannes.
Oh, okay, that's weird.
Yeah. But, you know, they
so
probably...
So they were like, hey, we're both working on this movie, but we have not met on the set.
Yeah.
Maybe they were, like, in, like a first read room together.
Yeah. And
at the most.
And they probably did promotion together. Went to the premiere together.
Okay, but they didn't really meet... But it says they met during production.
Yeah, I think they met timeline-wise during production.
I'm just saying that those two sets, they could have never been on set at the same time because they have no scenes together and no scenes literally in the same place at all.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
You're probably right. This is an IMDb trivia fact.
Okay,
take
sorry.
It as you will. But I did obviously double check. I went to both of their Wikipedias.
No, of course.
I went to both of their Wikipedias to try to get more info. The most more info I got was that they met on a flight to Cannes and they have a daughter together. And apparently it was a very dramatic because she was diagnosed with endometriosis and she didn't know she was going to be able to have children.
Oh my God.
Didn't want to get into all that, but here we are.
I'm sorry. I just needed more information. And you know what? I think the time slots will appreciate that backstory. So thank you so much for telling me about her endometriosis.
Yes. IMDb pointed out that they were the second couple to have met on the set of a Michael Crichton adaptation The first being Laura Dern and Jeff Goldblum during Jurassic Park, and that I was way more interested in. I was like, wow, I didn't know they dated.
I didn't know they dated either. Should I have known that?
No, it's also not on either of their Wikipedia pages in their personal life section. But
I love that couple. Like, yes, give me like a tall, spooky couple.
But according to the internet, yeah, they met during the making of Jurassic Park, and they were together until 1997. Oh. So they were together like maybe 3 to 4 years.
Wow, I honestly love that.
Yeah.
It's great.
Apparently Richard Donner, who produced and directed the film, had been one of the four directors bidding to direct the movie adaptation of Jurassic Park, and Michael Crichton chose Steven Spielberg, and, like, thank God.
Yeah.
If this movie's any indication.
This man is kind of a mess.
Can you imagine if, like, Jurassic Park just, like, wasn't a hit? Because...
Wow, we would, like, live in a different world. We really would.
Also, Pierce Brosnan turned down the role of Merrick before Gerard Butler signed on to do it. So, also, different movie. I feel like Pierce Brosnan was probably much older than Gerard Butler at the time.
I don't know. I have no sense of how old either of those two people are.
Okay. Gerard Butler is currently 52. So, in about 20 years ago, he was 32. Pierce Brosnan is definitely older than that.
Yeah. He's 69.
69. So, okay. 20 years ago, he'd have been 49. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that would have been a very different movie. I don't know. Gerard Butler was, like, really, like, a bright spot in this movie, yes. I thought. So I feel like Pierce Brosnan would not have been as good.
No, also, it would have been way creepier if it was, like, a young Lady Claire.
Oh, yeah,
and Pierce
sure.
Brosnan.
Yeah.
But maybe they would have cast Lady Claire older, but I...
Probably not.
Probably not. And if they had cast Lady Claire older, who knows if Anna Friel would have had a daughter with...
Oh, my God. The whole world is, like, crashing down around me. Aren't we all just time travel stealing each other's wives?
Yeah. Don't mess with the timeline. Lastly, in the DVD special extras, which I don't know what that means. I guess it's either like a behind the scenes tour or a deleted scene. Somewhere in the DVD special extras, there's a young, inconspicuous John Cena in the background.
What is he doing?
I don't know.
Is he just like background acting? Honestly, I loved a DVD special extra.
Yes.
Like, same. I miss the fact that we don't have those anymore.
I also miss waking up at a sleepover to the menu playing over and over.
Love that. Like, there's something so sweet about that.
Mm. Mm. All right. So I figured we could talk a little bit about some of these big names if I found anything interesting. So, like, right. I looked into Frances O'Connor, who obviously is a very successful actress, but... She, like, went to acting school and then became an actress. And I was like, man.
Personally, kind of boring.
Personally, don't care. Gerard Butler, on the other hand.
Tell me more about Gerard Butler.
Who, again, very handsome in this film.
Oh, he looks... This is... I texted you this, but he is peak Gerard Butler. Yes. 2003. It's, like, perfect timing for him.
I would love to kiss this man's face.
Run my fingers through that hair. Mm.
But... relevant to his character arc in this story, he had ear surgery as a child that left him with a mangled ear.
Oh. Does he have a famously mangled ear?
It's probably only mangled looking to him, or, like, if you're, like, this close to it.
Okay, okay. Because I don't think of him as, like, yes, Gerard Butler and his weird
Should
ear.
I Google Gerard Butler mangled ear?
Yeah, please.
Apparently, he sometimes has to glue his right ear back for filming.
Okay, so I don't think he has, like, a deformed ear. I think it's just, like... It maybe sticks out more than the other.
Or I think it's probably deformed in the back.
Oh, okay.
Which is why he didn't realize it until he had to shave his head.
I just feel like you've never touched the back of your ear.
I don't know. But, okay, apparently Gerard Butler's ear is deformed in some way that is more noticeable if his head is shaved and he hasn't glued his ear back. And he also still has
tinnitus
and hearing loss in his right ear. Which, is his right ear the one that gets lopped off? Because that probably was, like, weirdly cathartic for him.
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay. Also, Gerard Butler was a lawyer.
What? I didn't know that.
He graduated law school, drank a lot during law school, graduated, and he took a position as a trainee lawyer at an Edinburgh law firm. But his drinking continued, and he kept staying out late drinking and missed work, and... 1 week before he was going to be qualified as a lawyer, he was fired. So
Wow. He
was 25, an unqualified lawyer. What do? You go. You be an actor.
That makes sense to me.
He said he moved to London to pursue his dream of becoming famous, and he admits now that when I started out, I'm not sure I was actually in it for the right reasons. I wanted very much to be famous.
I mean, you know, good on him for just being like, yeah, I am an unapologetic starfucker in the beginning.
Well, and then he, like, was just working as a waiter, not really winning any acting roles. And then he met an old friend of his that he started dating,
uh-huh.
who is now a London casting director.
Oh, that's lucky.
And he became her boyfriend and assistant.
Okay, great.
Apparently, she took him to an audition for Coriolanus, mm-hmm. just a play of Coriolanus that someone was doing. He got that role, and then, okay, so he got cast in his, at this audition that he went to with his girlfriend casting director, and uh-huh. then, and then he got another professional acting job, and then got a job in the theater adaptation of Trainspotting at the Edinburgh Festival, and then at 30, about 3 years later, he moved to LA, and became Gerard Butler. Now. Yeah. And I mean, he was like around 32, 33 probably when he was filming this. So long after.
I feel like he was like really big in mm-hmm. in that time. Huge star at that moment.
I don't think he and
the casting director
are still together. But he now says that he doesn't drink alcohol at all.
That's probably for the best.
And also in February 2012, he went through rehab for substance abuse of painkillers.
Mm-hmm.
And which apparently he had, you know, got addicted to pain medication, as a lot of people do, after a surfing accident. But he seems like he's got his life together a little bit now.
I'm glad for him. And he's also got his goal of being famous.
Yeah. Okay. Paul Walker, who we all immediately were like, oh, it's that dead guy.
Yeah, that's like the, unfortunately, I hate to admit it, but that's like kind of the only thing I know about him.
Yeah, no, for sure, because the kind of movies he usually does were not like the kind that we were watching.
Yeah, for sure.
He's the Fast and the Furious guy. Which I haven't seen, but apparently he was a child and even a toddler actor. He began a modeling career as a toddler, starring in a television commercial for Pampers at the age of 2.
Wow.
The only other real fun facts about him other than his death are he was really into both marine biology and cars. He had over 30 cars at one point, and he did some car racing in real life. He competed in the Red Line Time Attack Racing Series.
Sounds like he was a good cast for Fast and the Furious, though.
Yes. And also, you'd be like, well, okay, I guess it makes sense that he died in a car accident, but he wasn't the one driving in the car accident.
Oh, how unfortunate.
Yeah. So on November 30th, 2013, around 3:30, which is very early, like in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Paul Walker, who was then 40, and Roger Rodas, who was 38, left an event for Walker's charity. Rodas was driving a 2005 Porsche, if that is relevant to your interests. Apparently, he was driving very fast, between 80 and 93 miles per hour in a 45 mile per hour speed zone.
Not great.
Car crashed into a concrete lamppost and two trees, catching fire. They both died of trauma and burns, and both of their bodies were burned beyond recognition.
Yikes. Yeah, I, for some reason, I do remember that it was a big deal when he died and that the car crash was meant to be, like, a very, very bad car crash.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, apparently, just, you know, no alcohol or drugs were found in either man's system. The area that they died is, like, apparently known for cars drifting. No mechanical failure, no evidence of drag racing, but it was just this car's speed and maybe the age of the tires were the primary reasons for the crash.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, don't go 90 miles per hour ever. I don't know. I'm not saying they obviously, tragedy, that's the thing about car accidents, is like, I know so many people that have driven so unsafely and are alive.
Yeah.
And then, so then when you hear about, like, incidents where people were driving 90 miles an hour, which maybe is too fast, and then it's just like, yeah, you shouldn't have been going that fast, but also I'm sure you went that fast a lot and didn't die.
Right.
It still feels jarring and random.
Yeah.
And part of the reason that the story, I think, was so big was Fast and the Furious 7 was in the middle of filming at the time of the death. It was put on indeterminate hiatus, citing a desire to speak with his family before determining what to do with the film. Obviously, the movie did eventually get finished. They used a lot of, like, stand-ins and stuff to complete the shots that they needed, but I guess they had enough to make it work. And
that's always very spooky when someone dies in the middle of filming something, and then they still release the film.
Didn't that happen with Heath Ledger, too?
Yeah, that's who I'm thinking of.
And then, you know, I remember that song, the See You Again song. Because they also, I think, have his character die in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, lots of people pay tribute to him. There's a documentary that came out in 2018 called I Am Paul Walker. Seems like he was like a decent, normal guy who died tragically.
That's very sad.
Yeah. Billy Connolly.
Moving on.
Moving on. It's late over here. So I didn't necessarily recognize his face or his name, but I was just like skimming his Wikipedia, and he's very popular in Scotland.
Oh,
he's done. Okay. He's a Scottish actor, retired comedian, artist, writer, musician, and presenter. He is sometimes known, especially in his homeland, by the Scots nickname the Big Yin.
Okay, love that.
Known for his idiosyncratic and often improvised observational comedy, frequently including strong language, Connolly has topped many UK polls as the greatest stand-up comedian of all time.
Wow. Okay, this was the guy who played the dad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was fun.
Yeah. I mean, he's also been in, like, a lot of movies.
I'm sure, yeah.
I was just like, oh, okay, this is a very famous man in Scotland.
I didn't know him, but yeah. He was fine.
Yeah. Okay, as you alluded to earlier, Timeline did not do well in the box office. The movie had a budget of $80 million, and they recouped $43
million. Oh, that is really bad. They lost so much money on this movie.
Yeah. On Rotten Tomatoes, the film has an approval rating of 13%. The consensus states this incoherently plotted addition to the time travel genre looks and sounds cheesy.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate.
I will say, based on how low the Rotten Tomatoes score was, I was expecting this movie to be much worse than it was.
Same. I thought I was gonna like have an actively bad time watching it, which mm-hmm. I didn't.
Yeah.
It was not a good movie, but I didn't like.
No.
I wasn't like cringing the entire way through, like, for example, last week.
Yes, with Cave Girl. yeah, I think part of it is, like, the floor is so much lower for, like, a lot of the movies, like, made-for-television movies that we watch, mm-hmm, right? Like, just the curve is different.
No, so, that's like, true.
A very bad, real...
$80 million movie.
Yes, is still better than, like... Mark Harmon television movie that people are like, it's fine, you know?
Yeah, and the set is made out of literal cardboard.
Right. Okay, and then I don't know if you want some history, because this movie is very specifically about 1357 France. The Battle of Castlegard and Castlegard are not real, but the crew of the movie did visit various European castles from around that period to make the castles and towns look as realistic as possible. But yeah, there was no Battle of Castlegard. There was no Castlegard, France. But apparently, in the movie, you can see that during the siege of the castle, there's a full moon. And on April 4th, 1357, when this is supposed to take place, there was indeed a full moon.
Okay, I love that. Someone was being very specific when they went back
yes.
to look.
The Hundred Year War is real, so, like, although the Battle of Castlegard is fictional, the movie is set during the Hundred Years War, which is a real 116-year-long on-and-off-again conflict between England and France.
They're, like, on-again and off-again, you know, like, who knows what's going on between them.
So, I don't know, I don't know why we decided we're on the French's side, but...
Yeah, all of a sudden, I don't really understand. Like, is it because, like... The English were, like, coming into France, so it's, like, kind of, like, they're colonizers, like, trying to, you know, they're trying to, like, take the land that is, like, belongs to the French.
Maybe. That sounds right. I guess there's very rarely a war where somebody from outside is coming in and we're like, yeah, go that guy.
Yeah, for sure. But it's just strange because we don't really, like, have any explanation for that in the movie itself.
Right. I think in the movie itself, we're just supposed to believe that... Because they know France is supposed to win this battle, they want France to win the battle.
Oh, that might be true.
I think that's supposed to be, like...
It makes sense to, like, put themselves on the side of the people who are going to win the battle, I suppose.
Well, and try to help those people win the battle so that they didn't fuck up history too much.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Plus, like, then Merrick is in love with the French lady.
Right, and the English immediately are, like, very, very mean and awful.
Yes.
Like, they kill Francois, which, right. like, unforgivable.
Unforgivable.
Like, we can never be on the side of the English if they're going to kill Francois.
I mean, even though Michael Sheen is doing a great job of making me want to root for him.
Yeah, completely. Like, Michael Sheen, great.
Michael Sheen is a delight in this movie. He's full of old-timey witticism. And just when you think he's not going to kill Francois, he kills Francois.
He straight up kills Francois.
Okay, so Greek Fire. They make a big deal about Greek Fire, which I'd never heard of before this. But apparently it was an incendiary weapon used by Eastern Roman Empire beginning around 672.
Okay, So it would have been, like, very well known by this point.
My best guess would it... Yes, it was, like, a... an old wives' tale, or, like, a rumor. Like, the Greek have this fire.
Okay. And that's why they were like, how do we get the Greek fire?
Right.
Yeah, okay, fair.
People aren't 100% sure what it is. Some historians believe it could be based on naphtha and quicklime.
Okay.
But the main thing is like, however it's made so that it's a fire that is not put out by water. Instead, it, like, water makes it stronger.
So it's like a Greece fire.
It's a Greek fire.
But yes.
Yes. Basically, yeah. So, because they would use it to set fire to enemy ships. It consisted of a combustible compound emitted by a flame-throwing weapon. And some historians, again, believe it could be ignited on contact with water.
I mean, that sounds pretty cool. I can see why they were psyched about it.
Yeah. I don't know why we don't use it now.
I bet there's something not dissimilar.
Yeah.
We have a lot of bad weapons that are really bad for people.
Okay, let's... All right. Let's... On that note...
Moving on.
Magic, science, just a dream.
Okay. So this is obviously a science one.
Yes.
Pretty explicitly.
Yeah.
The science is faxing, which is my favorite thing. They're like the big technology, faxing.
Yeah, again, even though it's like 2000 and we all had email.
I mean, I assume that, like, Michael Christian must have written this novel, like, in the 70s or whatever, right? So...
I don't know if it was that old.
Yeah, when did he write this?
1999.
Oh, really?
So that's why he was, like, going to production right away.
Oh, right. I forgot about that. Okay, yeah. Well, that's weird. Because if it had been, like, you know, the 80s or whatever, and he was like, ooh, faxing, I could understand that. And then they just, like, didn't update it for 2003. But, like, why didn't they, like, have them email themselves?
I don't know. I mean, I guess... Okay, I guess...
Send you through the World Wide Web.
Because that's all, like, fax... They make it seem like faxing is... You're sending the same piece of paper to places. But you're not. You're just... It's just a scan and the print.
Yeah, it's...
And you could do that over email.
Right. They're sending... You are sending the information about... The paper, not the paper itself.
Right. So in this case, you'd be sending the information, like, you'd be sending a...
Well, that comes to the question of, like, what, who are we? What are we? Are we the information about ourselves? Or are we just, like, could we be reassembled if they put together all of the DNA exactly the same? Or would you be a different person?
Also, when you fax something, the original stays where it was.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
You basically make a copy on the other side.
Yeah.
So there'd be two of them.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
So faxing is a bad... I mean, I guess they're, like, in the context of the movie, they're kind of using faxing as a metaphor, but they say it a lot. Mm. So...
This is one of the most... They try to explain it in a lot of movies that we've seen.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I didn't hate it. Like, I thought that the, like, the mirror room where they fax themselves out of was cool looking. I liked I liked the little necklaces that, like, bring you back. That's fine.
Yeah, and it almost, if you're not sitting here being like, this movie was kind of bad, let's break it down, it almost makes sense, right? Like,
yeah, it's a wormhole.
Yeah, when they have a conversation where I think Josh, the one who stays behind, says, a wormhole is one of the most volatile forces of the universe. You can't possibly send a person through one. And the boss ITC guy says, yeah, and you can't fit a piece of paper through a telephone wire, but you can send a fax. And then Josh says, yeah, only once you've broken the message into a stream of electrons, realization.
Yeah. I mean, I would not want to have my electrons scrambled. No, it sounds painful.
I think Josh makes a very rational choice.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like, also, like, the way that the professor ends up going back in the first place is they're basically just, like, his son asks, like, why did he go back? And essentially, they were like, because he really wanted to, and he was very convincing. That's the explanation they give. They're not like, oh, we sent him back on, like, a mission because he knows so much about France. They were like, no, he just, like, really wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, they talk...
Like, what?
They talk a lot about how they, like, want to send these archaeologists back as opposed to scientists because they're cultural experts, which will help them more in France.
No, it will help them specifically to get the professor back.
Yeah, no, I know. So I'm saying maybe they thought sending the professor back would help them gather more intel. I don't know. I guess the intel they want, though, is not on Castle Guard, France. It's on, like, why is this wormhole only going to this place? How do we fix it so that we can send a camera to New York?
Right.
So, I don't know.
The science of the faxing, I'm not so insulted about. The methodology and decision-making of the corporation is what really gets my goat here.
Because, yeah, they're sponsoring, allegedly they're sponsoring this dig. They say later that they are sponsoring this dig because they thought that they and the professor could help each other. We give the professor hints of the best excavation areas based on, you know, because they have people who are there at the time. And then he could figure out why we're locked into this particular place in time. So that's why they're funding the dig. But I'm like, why would this archaeologist know how a wormhole works?
I don't know what he could possibly, like, figure out. I guess, like, excavating the place itself is might be enough to give them more information, but
information about how to survive in 1357 Castle Guard, sure. And maybe, I guess, how to use this to their advantage. But information about how this wormhole was created by the machine and then how they can, like, fix it so that the machine actually works as a 3D fax and not a wormhole. I don't know how this archaeologist is going to help them with that.
Yeah, that doesn't really make sense. I would like to see the version of the movie where they can send them anywhere in time and place. Like, that sounds a lot more interesting to me. And dynamic.
And there's a real villain in Doniger.
Yeah. Weird choices.
Steven Spielberg, can you remake this?
Yeah, Steven Spielberg, come on over here. The premise is just really not bad. Like, I don't hate the premise.
I'd be interested to read this book.
Yeah, I love, like, an archaeologist that's also, like, a superhero. Like, I love that trope. Mm-hmm. For some reason, where, like, archaeology is one of the most exciting and adventure-filled professions you can have.
Have you heard of Indiana Jones?
No. Tell me more.
I think you'd really dig him.
I dig him.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Shut it down. Shut this whole production down.
It is late.
We are sleepy. Yeah. So that all I dig. But the motivations behind the corporation don't quite line up to me.
Yeah. And again, I'd be curious to see if they did in the book. I feel like Michael probably laid it out better.
I have a feeling you're correct.
This movie also has a lot of feelings about the past, as a lot of these time travel movies do.
Mm-hmm.
Merrick and Chris have a big conversation in the beginning about how Chris is like, oh, all you guys... Chris is not an archaeologist. Chris is just visiting his dad and gawking at a cute lady. But
which, honestly, love that for him. Sounds like a great time.
Yeah, good summer.
Yeah.
I'm going to France.
Yeah.
Chris is trying to figure out why they all like the past so much. And Chris is like, the past is why my parents split up. The past is what I've been force-fed since I was a kid. And then Merrick's like, what is the future? It's more of the same. More gadgets, more machines. The past is where it's at. The people there, they care about each other. The men had honor.
Yeah.
And then Chris says, that's more of that romantic warrior crap. And I'm like, yes, Chris.
I mean, yeah, he had some points. And I don't think that his point was like, I don't think that his mind would have been changed by the experience that he had.
No, I think if anything, it reversed. Like, well, Merrick obviously decides to stay in the past. So, like, I guess Merrick is fine.
Is fine. The Merrick past. Thinks that...
But Kate later says something...
Oh, yeah.
Down, mm-hmm. When Kate's like, I'm going to climb on top of this roof and help us all escape. And Chris is like, it's so dangerous. You're going to die. And she says, there's one thing worse than dying here, and that's living here. I refuse to do either. And I'm like, I thought you all were obsessed with the past.
Yeah, I was surprised by her saying that, but she is correct.
Yes.
Like, she also, like, literally just saw her friend get brutally murdered in front of her.
Sure, yes.
So I would be like, yeah, I want to get out of here.
And it's also a woman. Like, I think, you absolutely. Know, she's really devoted to archaeology. She's really into her job and learning stuff about the past. But I don't think she expresses, we ever see her express the way Merrick does, that she wants to live in the past, because
she knows that it would not be good for her.
Right. It's a complicated thing to love the past when you are anyone but a white, straight, cis man.
Yeah, definitely.
What have you done? So, I'm sure I missed some consistency things here and there, because I was just very confused by a lot of this movie. I didn't know enough about medieval history to keep up.
Yeah, I don't know if it was that or if it was, like, Did you notice that there were a lot of people, like, talking over each other a lot of the time? Like, I felt like there were more scenes in this movie where people, there was, like, a bunch of people kind of yelling at the same time. And I'd be like, wait, what happened?
I didn't notice that. But I was constantly, like, I'm not sure how all these plans are lining up. Right? Like, everyone's like, we're going to escape over here. And then Kate's like, we need to go to the monastery. And I'm like, what's at the monastery?
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
What's the plan?
No. And the other problem was there were too many fucking characters.
Yes.
There were just too many people to keep track of. And I, as much as I hated Francois dying and all the other brutal murders that happened.
I mean, I didn't really care about the military guys getting murdered.
I guess I didn't care about them. They didn't give us much to care
except that the other one military guy really fucked everything up by bringing a grenade back.
And yeah. Then that guy was an idiot. But I was kind of glad when people kept getting picked off, because I was like, oh, thank God, I don't have to follow all these fucking people.
Yeah.
Who all, but, like, all the men, by the way, like, kind of look the same. They're all white dudes.
Maybe there could have been one other woman.
Maybe one other woman. We could have been able to, like, see between these people. Like,
yeah. Yes. I mean, this is a later section, but.
Sure.
It does help you distinguish. Or a single black person. Like, I mean, I guess, again, complicated. They have to go back to the medieval past or whatever.
Yeah.
But the people who work at ITC could have been black. Like,
yeah,
they could have distinguished between them.
Right. Because, yeah, because even, like, the people at ITC, I was like, I don't know who all these fucking people are.
Yeah.
And, like, the one person, the one Josh or whatever, Josh Stern, I kept thinking that he worked for ITC, and then he'd, like, say something, and I'd be like, oh, fuck, no, that's that other guy. Too many fucking characters.
Yeah. I don't even know who Jimmy Gomez was.
Who the fuck is Jimmy Gomez? He sounds like he might not be white.
Yeah, I looked up the actor who played him to be like, if I see his face, will I remember who this character was? Because he's not mentioned in the plot summary.
Right, right.
I did not.
Great. Okay, so clearly not important.
But anyway, yes. So hard to keep track of all the consistency things, but, you know, we'll still point
out.
We'll
do our best.
We'll do some stuff.
I guess my main question with this movie was, did they change things in the past? Or did they just have the history wrong?
Okay, yes. So that's a good question, because here's my thing. All the things that happened had already happened, except for the Lady Claire bit. Like,
right.
When they find the note from the professor, and there's a destroyed wall in the monastery that later in 1357, Kate destroys herself.
Mm-hmm.
There's the guy in the sarcophagus that they've already found in the beginning who's missing an ear, who turns out to be Merrick. Like, all of those things had already happened in 2003, and then they just, like, find out about them, how they must have happened back in 1337.
Right, yeah. But.
But. They
the
say
major hole is
the major hole is that they're like, yes, the French won this battle because they were motivated by the execution of Lady Claire. And back in 1357, Lady Claire is saved. She does not die. The French win instead by going through this tunnel into
the
castle.
Which feels like a significant, like, that would be a thing that they would know about. It would be a thing that would be talked about in relationship to the battle. So, I don't know. Do they go back to the future and that's the story of it when they arrive?
But regardless, that should have been the story of it. If we're going by the logic of all the other things, right? That they've already found the note. The wall was already damaged before they even go back in time. That would have already been the story.
Yeah, that's really annoying. I mean, this suggests that they were able to go back and change the past. If Lady Claire lives.
Right.
But then that would be the only thing that would have been changed. Everything else was like, had off.
They had already seen about before they went back.
It doesn't add up.
Yeah, before they go back in time, all the things, even the things that they change in 1357, had already happened.
Right,
like the wall being destroyed already is a big.
It would not have happened if Kate had not always gone back.
Right, and like they say, when they find the, in 1357, which I don't know how his dad escaped to the monastery to write the letter and then got re-imprisoned. Never explained. But there's a letter in the monastery from the dad, which is what they find that sends them on this path to go back in time. And they find it again in the monastery because the dad must have, like, put it there a couple days before.
Wait, no. At some point they show... Oh, no. I was going to say, at some point they show, because I remember, like, his glasses on the floor. Yes. But that's, his glasses were already in the monastery.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so that was different. Yeah, no, it's confusing.
So when they find this note, Kate says, put it back. If we don't find this in the future, then we don't find your dad. So, it's very cyclical, right? Like, all these things are happening because they went back, but they had already happened before they went back, right? It's like time being a loop type thing.
Right. Which I'm fine with. I just wish it had been completely consistent. Right.
Which all makes sense, except for Lady Claire.
I wish they had just had, like, an explanation of why people thought it was that... Like, right.
It's, like, another woman, like...
Exactly. Yeah. They had, like a what's that called? A lookalike, a...
Doppelganger?
A doppelganger. And then that's how that happened. And then they discover, and she, like, emerges and is like, I'm alive. And everyone's like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. It's... Because that is changed. Which also, I was thinking, like... Because first of all, while he kept saving her, I was like, I think she just needs to die. Like,
the universe is, like, continuing to try to make her die.
Well, and also, if it's really important to you that the French win this battle, like, maybe she needs to die. But then she didn't die, and the French still won the battle. So I'm like, okay, maybe they didn't actually need that motivation, and they were just sort of retrofitting a meaning on her death to begin with, right?
Right. Like, it does bring up a question of, like, our perception. It could bring up, potentially, a question of, like, our perception of people's motivations in history and the stories we tell about them. But instead, they miss that opportunity in favor of just being like, that wasn't what happened, and we're not going to explore it. Like, it would be so cool if they'd been like, that's not what happened, but, like, here's why they ascribe this meaning to it later.
Yes. Yeah, and I will say for archaeologists who are obsessed with history, for a lot of this movie, they do not seem to be concerned about how much they are fucking up the past.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They're like, whatever.
And this also, I think, ruins your theory, because when we did A Knight Before Christmas, you talked about how you're like, it's far back enough that it'd be really hard for them to screw anything up. Because it's so far back. Butterfly
effect-wise. Yes, I agree with that. But I think that these people are at the center of, like, a major historical event. And I think the Knight himself was kind of insignificant. I think that's the reason, like, historically, he was pretty insignificant.
Sure, okay.
So, like, it would be hard for, like, you or I, if someone, like, if we went to the future, 400 years in the future, 700 years in the future... Mm-hmm. Nothing might change about what happened.
You don't know. We could be very important.
Overall. But I think, me personally, I think I'm probably not that important. Like, I think it'd be fine.
You don't know. You could be... But you don't know. Just because you don't think you're going to do anything important doesn't mean you couldn't be, like, murdered by someone important.
No, of course. Like, all of those things could be true. But also, like, the chances of you...
Or giving birth to someone
important. Yes, I know. But the chances of you being... the linchpin of history, or you just being, like, some guy, like, the chances are much higher that you're just some guy, even if you're a knight.
Sure.
So that would be my argument here, is that it's still true, but they were at the center of a very important battle.
Yeah.
And so they did find themselves. Like, sometimes you do find yourself inside a moment where you're like, this is history that's happening around me right now.
Did Michael Sheen die? I don't remember. Or did he just, like, run away?
Oh, you mean in the movie?
Yes. Sorry. Did Lord Oliver die? Is that better?
No, I don't know. The way you said it was, like, has Michael Sheen passed away?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think he has, which is why I was like, what? Did he die? Yeah, he... I think so. Doesn't Chris have a big fight with him?
I don't know. Does Chris have a big fight with anyone? Chris doesn't... At least, like, Gerard Butler... I don't know. Is it supposed to be because he's an archaeologist that he's, like, really good with a bow and arrow?
They suddenly break him out with a bow and arrow, and you're like, wait, what? Why is he so good with it?
Perfect aim.
Yeah, he's a genius with a bow and arrow, apparently.
Chris has no usable skills.
No, he's...
Besides being, like, blonde and handsome.
And barely even that. Like, he's just kind of a wet blanket the whole movie. What happens to Lord Oliver? I don't know. The battle scene was so chaotic and hard to follow.
And also, it was dark.
Yes. And it goes to show you that, like, there are good battle scenes and there are bad battle scenes. And this was, like, not it. Like, certain Game of Thrones battle scenes, you're, like, hooked. This?
Wasn't there also, I didn't watch more than season one of Game of Thrones, but wasn't there also a very dark battle scene that people had an issue with?
That was bad. But there were certain other ones throughout the show, because it happened, like, all the time, where you'd be like, holy shit, like, this is really compelling, and the story, like, I understand the story of what's happening, even though I don't really usually care about, like, how a battle's going. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
I don't know. I have another question.
Okay. Do you think Lay it on me.
Did people in 1357 have bangs?
This is a great question. I don't think I have an answer to that.
I think they didn't.
Okay, fair enough.
Would be my guess.
But if she shows up with bangs, do you think they'd be like, shun the witch? Or do you think they'd just be like, I don't know what's happening?
Her hairstyle in general was very modern. She had a half pony. Like,
early. Like a half pony could be like a thing. I don't know.
I just felt like they were so concerned about Francois' glasses, and...
Poor Francois, they took away his glasses.
And didn't give him contacts. There are contacts in 2003.
Yeah, and it's gonna be, like, 6 hours. There's no reason why he would not be able to use one set of contacts.
Yes!
What's the problem?
Give him some contacts.
Insane.
But, like, yeah, they're like, you can't bring anything back modern with you. Put on these clothes. But also, like, Kate, your modern haircut, and, like... Paul Walker's haircut was the most 2000 haircut I've ever seen in my whole life. Oh,
yeah,
it was,
like,
the
spiky, like, yeah. No, very 2000.
Also, why did they make his dad shave? Everyone in 1357 has facial hair.
I don't know. That was really weird. They made a whole big deal about his beard and, like, him. In the first scene, they were talking about his beard, and I didn't really understand why. Maybe that was a holdover from the book that made more sense in the book.
Yeah. What I also assume was a holdover from the book... Because they want, like, the book seems to really focus on Doniger, but, like, in the movie, it felt like the stuff at the lab, where he comes back and destroys the lab, felt so unnecessary. It felt like the lab being destroyed was such an unnecessary hurdle, when there's already a lot of hurdles in 1357.
Yeah, that's true.
It felt like a hat on a hat, where I was like, just, this movie is long, we don't need to keep going back to the lab.
I mean, the way that they get back from 1357, like, is... kind of easy, like, if everything's working properly.
But there's, I thought about this. They get their markers taken. Daquerre takes their markers eventually anyway.
Right.
So just, like, have them take their markers when they imprison them. Have them, they're like, you don't get to keep these necklaces. And then they can't get back. They need to get the markers back.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, that we didn't have to have that whole thing. You're right. And, like, I didn't really care about the scenes in modern day. Like, they didn't make that character super interesting. It sounds like he was a lot more interesting in the book. But he wasn't super interesting in the movie. And so, like, when he was on screen, I was like, can we please go back to 1357?
Yeah, and then the scenes at the end where, like, he, again, where he has the argument in the locker room with Stephen Kramer.
So weird.
Was from a different movie.
No, completely. Like, I was like, wait, what? Is this,
they're
like,
dramatic monologuing at each other? I don't know what's happening.
And I, like, don't care about either of these people. Like, right. I'm not invested. And then he, like, dies, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, okay, the amount of TV and movies that I've watched recently where a character just dies because someone, like, lightly pushes them and they fall into something and hit their head. I need to know, does this happen that often in real life?
This is a really good question.
It feels like it happens all the time in film and TV. Like, people accidentally kill each other this way. And also...
I feel like you would have to push really hard.
Yeah.
Because, like, we don't have, like, soft heads like babies.
Right. And, like, he falls into, like, a coat rack.
Yeah.
Not even... It's not like... And he doesn't fall to, like, the point of a coat... He falls into, like, the bottom flat part of a coat rack.
Right, which doesn't even seem like it would be, like, strong enough. Like, I feel like the coat rack
his
would
his head
lose.
Would be stronger. Yeah. Yes. But also, I was like, hey, why don't you call 911?
Also, there was, like... If they wanted it to be like, okay, this guy's dead, like, they could have put, like, a pool of blood.
Yes.
It's a very, very strange moment.
Yeah. If anyone has an answer to my question about if people really die that way,
often,
can you please let me know?
Often.
I feel like we would hear about it.
I feel like we would.
I feel like I only see it
there
in
would be, like,
fictional things
ads
I don't
about,
hear about
like,
it.
Don't push your friends. Because their heads are very soft.
Yeah, or, like, we'd know people, like, who get in bar fights from our hometowns who... have killed people.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, yeah, you're right. That was weird. Okay. I have a major question. It seems like you can put, like, a lot of people into this time travel fax machine at once. And all the molecules get, like, scrambled up. Like, that's the whole thing. Why aren't they, like, emerging in 1357, like, with each other's, like, body parts?
I mean, when you send a fax, the letters don't go to the wrong place.
I guess, but, like, it just seems... You don't put all of... You don't, like, crumple up a piece of paper and, like, shove it in the fax machine.
No, but you put several pieces of paper on top of each other.
But the pieces of paper are individually, like, processed.
Sure.
Whereas all of these people are being processed at the same
holding
time.
Hands. Holding hands! Chris and Kate were holding hands.
Yeah, this is
or
what
actually, no, Chris was just grabbing Kate's wrist while she did not hold his
friend
hand.
Friend Chris. Can't take him anywhere. Yeah, so, like, I don't know. It seems like they would be scrambled and, like, have someone else's head on your body.
Yeah.
So...
They've worked it out. It's in the science.
Does their love stand the test of time?
So we're talking about the romance. I guess we can talk about Chris and Kate, and then we can also touch on Merrick and Lady Claire, if you would like.
I would like that, yes.
Great. Chris and Kate. It's very clear from, like, the first time we see Chris, his dad is like, you don't like me that much. You're just hanging out here because of Kate. And Chris is like, yeah, and?
Yeah, so?
And Chris's dad is like, the professor, I guess I should say. He has a name, but there's so many names, I thought it was just easier to call him
Everyone calls him, like, yeah. The professor or just professor.
Says, you're from different worlds, and you saw how that turned out between your mother and me. If it's between archaeology and you, you'll lose.
I loved that. That was my favorite, maybe my favorite line in the whole movie, except for another line which we still haven't gotten to talk about.
What?
My ear!
Oh. My ear! Yeah, I guess, well, what, I guess we could, what did you want to talk about that?
I don't know. I just realized, like, we're not going to have time. Maybe we could talk about it. Well, I guess we're talking about it now.
Yeah, let's just talk about it.
This fits into no category, but my favorite moment of the whole movie was when Gerard Butler's ear gets cut off and he just yells, my ear, my ear!
Yeah, and then, because he's realizing, you see him realize, he's like, I feel like he's realizing in that moment, he's the one-eared guy from the sarcophagus.
Yes.
But I'm like, you would be in so much pain if someone cut off your ear, you would not be able to think that straight.
Yeah, there was just so much, Gerard Butler, it's really a testament to Gerard Butler, because he just, like, packs so much into those two words, and honestly, I loved it.
That
loved
is very true.
Every second of it.
He does a really great job. You get the whole journey. You get him realizing he's the guy from the sarcophagus and, like, realizing he no longer has an ear and all of these things in that moment. But also, I'm like, you would be in so much pain. You would not be able to have that realization. You would just be like, ow.
This hurts a lot. Yeah. No, for sure. Okay, anyway. Okay, sorry.
Anyway, back to Chris and Kate.
Back to Chris and Kate. Yeah, I think the moment where his dad is like, you will lose to archaeology is one of my favorite moments.
Well, because, and in that moment, is he admitting that, like, Chris's mom lost archaeology?
100%. He's like, fuck you, fuck everybody, archaeology is the one true love. And I think that's true. Like, I don't think Kate gives a shit about this guy.
No, he...
Regardless of this experience, to be honest.
No, later that day, he goes to try to bring her a beer while she's working. And she's like, yeah, I'll take a break. And she says something about how he... is clearly into her, and he says, I've been hoping you'd notice. And she says, I've been hoping you'd quit noticing I'd notice. And then she says, you're the boss's son. And she's like, dude, I'm not losing my job for you, is basically what that is saying.
I guess, but, like, my question to that was, like, why does that matter? It seems like, I guess it would be, like, a little bit unprofessional, but it's not, like...
Sure.
Like, what's the big deal?
Yeah, maybe she just, like,
why
doesn't want to deal with
it. Why is
him
being the boss's son? And, like, she clearly, like, it seems like she has, like, a mentorship kind of relationship with the professor. I think it would be fine.
Maybe, like, she's in love with the professor.
That did cross my mind. She does seem to really care about the professor.
Something that crossed my mind after we met Gerard Butler's character was, is she not fucking Gerard Butler?
I wrote that down. Yeah, she should be fucking Gerard Butler. I don't know what she was thinking.
I look at both those men and I'm like,
Gerard Butler.
Gerard Butler.
1000% Gerard Butler. Yeah, no contest. But yeah, she's not. She's just like a very serious archaeology lady, and, like, you're not gonna make her
Yeah, she
give anything up for love, because she doesn't care about love.
She can't do both. She can't dig things up and then kiss somebody.
No,
of course not. So much time in the day.
I mean, that's what they say.
I also thought it was very funny, and I don't know if this was writer, director, or just, like, Paul Walker, but, like, the amount that he's, like, using this very traumatic experience where he's, like, lost his dad to, like, touch her is very funny.
Oh, yeah.
There's a moment where they're just, like, they're looking at this, like, paper trying to figure out what's happening with, if it's that handwriting from 600 years ago, blah, blah, blah. And he puts his arm on her shoulder, and then she looks at his hand on her shoulder and just, like, looks back at the computer.
Yeah.
And it's so funny.
She is the saltiest moment. She's like, get this man's hand off of me.
And I love it. I'm like, yeah, use your dad's disappearance to drop a feel on this lady's shoulder.
Shoulder. The problem is that they go from that moment to, like, her kissing him. Like, yeah. With nothing in between, basically. Like, to develop their relationship.
Right. It's trauma bonding. Like,
yeah, but, like, it's obvious. Like, yeah. There's a lot of trauma bonding in movies. And sometimes it really, really works. And other times you're like, this is trauma bonding.
Right. Yeah, the kiss seemed to come out of nowhere. Although I was like, great, glad we got that part over with. And we don't need to worry about a big kiss later on, right? Because there's not really time for a big kiss later on when they're, like, running in battle.
I think they could make it work, honestly.
But I really did like the moment where they're, like, sitting. I don't remember why. They're, like, sitting in some hay. After she's killed the guard to help them escape, they're just, like, sitting in this, like, hay hallway. Alleyway.
A hay hallway, as one does.
And just, like, hiding or processing or I don't know. They sort of consensually now have their arms around each other. And she's talking to him and saying, like, I killed that man. I gotta live with that. Which, again, we love when movies acknowledge consequences to actions, even actions within time travel.
Yep, absolutely.
Yes, but also just, like, it was a very sweet moment. And he, like, I don't remember what he says, but he's just, like, he's really, like, listening and taking it in. And it was a nice, like, real person moment. And I'm like, yeah, this is nicer to me than a random kiss in front of everyone.
Yeah, same. I agree. That was a nice moment. And I did actually think that, like, kind of all the characters who ended up having to kill people really grappled with it. And mm-hmm. I will say that I was impressed by that.
Yeah, that's because most of the actors in this movie are very good actors.
Yeah, no, it's true.
So, like, even if there's not a line about it, like, I think with Merrick, you see him, like, have facial moments of recognition of, like, what he's just done.
Because Gerard Butler is, like, really good. I don't know.
You go to law school. That's it.
All he wanted was to be famous. Turns out he's, like, a really good actor. I don't know. Am I a Gerard Butler stan now? Maybe.
Do we need to watch The Bounty Hunter?
Yeah, we do. We need to watch all of Gerard Butler's work now.
I haven't watched The Phantom movie in a really long time.
I don't think that deserves a rewatch. Okay. I think we're good without that one.
Okay, anyway, yeah, so that's all to say, like, it's fine. They're both, like, fine if they want to date.
I don't know what he has to offer her. Like, she seems pretty cool. He doesn't really have a personality beyond, like,
but sometimes if you're
I want to make sure my dad's okay.
But sometimes if you're in a high-stress job, you just want a himbo to fuck. Like,
I mean, yeah, maybe that's why she wasn't fucking Gerard Butler, because, like, they
we also don't know that they have not fucked.
I feel like they might have.
Yeah, I think Kate can do better. I don't think their love will stand the test of time. I mean, maybe, because they'll be, like, really trauma bonded over this for a while. I think their love will last for a couple years. They're also going to be doing long distance, because I have a feeling that whatever Chris's job is, he will, or, like, whatever, unless Chris,
he can't just hang out.
Becomes an archaeologist.
He can't just hang out on the archaeological dig site forever. Like, he's got to do something at some point.
So, yeah, I think they will always be very good friends.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. And I think ultimately she will choose archaeology over him.
Yes, and I think ultimately he will realize that they are not, like, necessarily right together. He just, like, thought she was very pretty.
Yeah.
Okay, Merrick and Lady Claire.
I liked this one. Maybe it was because I'm, like, now apparently in love with Gerard Butler. I don't know. I thought it was nice. It was very, like, did you guess from the beginning when he was talking about the sarcophagus so much that he was in there?
I did not guess that, but I did guess very early on that random French woman was Lady Claire.
Yes. I guessed it was him in the sarcophagus and that she was Lady Claire.
Well, bully for you.
Very obviously plotted to me, but I was here for it. Like, I like that. I like that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not guess about the sarcophagus. I forgot about the sarcophagus very quickly.
Yeah, that's fair enough. It was a dumb scene. It was a poorly written scene to begin with. But yeah, I thought that they had a nice, they had nice chemistry.
Why does she speak English?
I guess because, like, they've been in a 100 years war with England and it might be a useful skill.
I guess. I don't know who taught her. Who would teach you English, though, if everyone who speaks English is someone that you're at war with?
I mean, they would have spies and stuff, right?
Sure. Okay, maybe. And I guess she has nobility. Like, yeah. She's high up, would get a good education.
She would get educated, whatever. Yeah. My bigger question was, why did they, like, go in, like, a little acorn boat in the river? Like, he pushes her in a little acorn boat in the river, and she's just, like, sitting in the acorn, and he's in the water. That was very strange to me.
I think it was, like, to throw the horses off their scent.
Horses do not smell people.
I don't know.
They were acting like it was to throw the horses off their scent, but horses are not smelling. It's dogs. Dogs smell.
I don't know. He was just like, I guess just because he knows that area because of the digs and stuff. And like, he's seen like a lot of old maps. So maybe he's just like, I know this river leads away from the English or whatever. I don't know.
But why get in the river? I don't know. It was just a very strange scene. It was a nice scene. Like, they're talking and it was nice.
Was it? He's like, are you married? And I'm like, that really? A yes or no to this question is what's going to keep you from dating this woman from 700 years ago?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I mean, I don't know. I guess I just like
their chemistry. You're charmed by Gerard Butler.
I'm charmed by Gerard Butler and I like their chemistry. Yes. Like, that's ultimately what it was.
For sure.
You're right.
It was nice to watch.
There wasn't a lot of substance to it. I guess there was zero chemistry between Chris and Kate, so yeah. I was, like, tricked into believing that, like, this was the greatest love story of all time. That's what happened.
Yeah. Gerard Butler and Lady Claire, I don't remember the actress's name, but she did end up marrying Doniger, which I don't see that, but...
Happy for them. Love was in the air, apparently. You know, I love, like, a, you know... He sacrifices
mm-hmm.
to be with yes. her for the rest of time. Like, that's hot to me.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of pressure on her, but yeah. A lot of pressure on her, but she seems down for it.
Yeah. They're saves her life a lot.
Faded through the ages. Like, I was into it.
Yeah, no, they had it was nice to watch them together. They look nice. They had nice chemistry. I believed that he was into her. Yeah, definitely, I think the love story more likely to, well, we know it stands the test of time. Right. So.
And it was nice of them to name their kids after all their friends.
Yeah. Although I feel like the oldest one could have been Francois, right? Like, you don't know how many you're going to have. Name the oldest one Francois, and then if you get to Chris and Kate, great.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Because you know Chris and Kate, like, made it.
Yeah.
Or, like, you can pretty much presume they did, because their bodies aren't here.
Right. Also, Francois is a French name, and Lady Claire is French, so. Okay.
Ladies, did we just time travel back to the 1950s?
So here's where we talk about all of our intersectional feminism woes. I'm a little conflicted here. Originally, when I was taking notes during the movie, before I did my Blast from the Past research, I was like, okay, like, there are... Both these female characters are fairly well-rounded. They seem to not just exist to make out with these men.
Yeah.
But then when I saw the thing about how the book had more female characters, it really put into stark relief for me that, like, why are there only two women?
And why do they only, they fall, have to be there right. to fall in love. Yeah, even if they do other things.
Does not, definitely doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
No, for sure no.
I don't think the two of them ever meet.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, it's hard because Kate, I think, is a very well-rounded female character. Like, she does make out with Chris, but she's also, like, she saves them a lot.
Yeah, and, like, she makes out with him of her own volition. It's very much her agency.
She is the best climber.
She's the best climber. Everybody knows it. There's so much climbing that she has to do in this movie.
She's prepared to take a life.
Yeah, and prepared to grapple with it.
Yes. You know, Claire also seems to be doing a lot of, like, spying and stuff on her own, and when... I mean, we didn't talk about any of the consistency or anything in the language of all of this, like, the way
Obviously,
like, with everything else, like, they would not really be able to understand each other, even if they all spoke English, because the English would be very different.
But... And probably the French would be different, too.
Yes. It also struck me as super modern, because when Merrick says to Claire's brother, keep her safe, or don't let her out of your sight. And Claire says, I can take care of myself. And I'm like, no one in 1357, man or woman, is saying, I can take care of myself. This is the most modern sounding sentence. And no woman would be like, I can take care. Like, it's just, like, not a thing that they would occur to them to say. It's very 2003 feminism.
Yeah, it does feel like that. I was here for it, though. Like, I'd rather that than, like, her being like, oh, damsel in distress.
Yes, and that's why I'm conflicted, because neither of these women are damsels in distress, even though he doesn't end up saving her life. But she also, like, saves herself a lot and, like, is putting herself purposefully with agency into these dangerous situations where she knows she might die.
Yeah, and the thing was, when there was the whole plot line about her dying and being the motivation, I think if I could see a plot line in which he somehow reveals this to her, that, like, this is what's gonna happen, and she's like, I will die for France.
Yes.
You know, like, that would have been very much within her character and, like, a much more interesting mm-hmm. way to do that. But instead,
right.
They don't do that.
Right, and it's fine, and I agree, like, it is cool that they have constructed a character that I agree that would have been, that doesn't feel out of character, that she would have done that if right. she had had the choice and the knowledge. So, like, the two female characters that they give us are very cool, are cool ladies, but, like,
they're still the romantic centers.
They're still, yes, they're still there for romance, and why can we not just have a couple of other women?
Right.
There's so many characters in
there
this film.
Yeah, just an indescribable number of people in this film.
More women and, like, any person of color anywhere.
Yeah.
And again, I get why maybe they couldn't put them in the group that's going back, but that could have been a discussion, right? If Josh Stern or, like, one other person in their group had been a person of color, like, that's a conversation then they could have.
Right, sure. They could be like, I'm not going back. You know what will happen to me back there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead, Francois is the most depressed person we get.
Again, R.I.P. Francois.
R.I.P. Francois. Could have used less white men all around. If that means you take characters out, if that means you give us more women, if that means you give us more people of color, all of the above, great. There's
absolutely.
Just so many white men in this movie.
Yeah, no, it's true. Just way too many.
I didn't even write all of their names in the summary because there was just...
so many that don't matter yeah. and just there to be confusing, honestly.
Yeah. But yeah, again, like I said, the two women that we do get are cool. And one of them has endometriosis. So, that's feminism. Is it the best of times or the worst of times? Here's where we talk about if you should watch it, in what context. We rate it on our doomsday clock on a scale from noon to midnight. Noon being notoriously gouge your own eyes out. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. It's Cave Girl.
Yeah, forever Cave Girl.
Forever Cave Girl. Midnight being, you know, a party in your eyeballs. This is the best thing you've ever seen. A++. For our podcast reference, I think Palm Springs.
Mm-hmm. Our favorite.
Have we had any other midnights? Hard to know. Who cares? Moving
on.
Doesn't matter.
We had close, but I don't think we had a full midnight, but other than that one.
Basically, though, noon is bad, midnight is good. Final thoughts and rating, Helena.
I'm gonna give this movie, I'm gonna say, like, a 4.30. Like, it's not the worst thing I've ever seen. There were parts of it that I was like, yeah, this is fine. Gerard Butler's very handsome. I'm very charmed by him.
And Michael Sheen.
And Michael Sheen was there, too.
I'm very charmed by Michael Sheen in this movie.
I mean, he's good in this movie. He's, like, not as exciting to me as Gerard Butler, I guess. He's fine. If you, like, need a medieval fix, I guess, this could be an okay thing to watch. If you want to just, like, relax into how confusing it is. Just, like a warm bath, you know? Just,
right.
like, let it wash over you.
Don't try to follow.
Don't try to follow. Just, like, let it wash over you.
I think it's hard because I think I liked this movie, or, like, I'm prone to rate this movie higher just because I had such low expectations going in,
mm-hmm.
and it was not that bad. And the women were cool. I will say I typed 1:25 in, and I'm officially bored and can't tell what's happening during this fight.
Okay, I mean, that's pretty far in, though.
Yeah. But then I also typed during the last scene where they were unveiling, reading the names in the sarcophagus, why am I crying?
I'm not sure why, but I'm happy for you.
There was music swelling in the background. And they were also, reading Francois's name. I don't know.
And Gerard Butler, like, got a happy ending. Yeah. We want that for him. So.
I was impressed with how many of their characters they were willing to kill off.
I love that, honestly. Hate that Francois was one of them, but yes. Love the boldness.
Yes. I would have swapped Francois for Chris, TBH, but...
Chris was not compelling.
I know, but Chris was not going to die.
Yeah.
Amazing
that he was the center of this movie, truly. I'm truly floored when I think back to the fact that he's the protagonist.
I know. I'm really just procrastinating because I don't... I wouldn't watch it again. But I wouldn't tell someone not to watch it. I don't know. I guess... I also, like, I don't want to copy you, but, like, 4 feels too low and 5 feels too high.
So 4:30.
Like, I think it's 4:30.
I'm glad we agree. Yeah. No, I think that's right.
Also, we didn't talk about this, and we don't need to talk about it now, but another note I took during this was, like, I think I might be slightly claustrophobic, because whenever they have to go into tunnels in any of these kinds of movies, I really hate it.
Really?
It really makes me... Ugh.
Have you gone into tunnels in your life?
I mean, only when I was a kid and I didn't like it. Like, okay. At Liberty Science Center, they have that dark tunnel that I didn't like. And also when I went into the tunnels in Chuck E. Cheese and I broke my finger.
Okay, well, that's probably why you hate tunnels. That's a pretty clear explanation. Just saying. We did, like, a cave walk thing in Greece, and I had to bail early because I did not like it.
So there you go.
Yeah, no, it's... Because it's just, like, when am I going to be through this?
Right. I don't even like... Yeah, I don't like being in the subway. I don't like being in the Holland Tunnel. I'm like, where is the light?
Yeah, no, you... Get you me want, the light. You want to get to the end, for sure, for sure. Wait, last question on this subject. Tunnel or bridge?
What do you mean?
Like, would you rather be stuck in a tunnel or stuck in the middle of a very long bridge?
A bridge, for sure.
Really?
Yeah, I could see the sky, I could breathe.
Yeah, but, like, you're, like, on the edge. Like, that also freaks me out.
No, that doesn't bother
me. You're on something very narrow.
That doesn't bother me.
Have you ever
I think it's claustrophobia.
Have you ever driven across the Bay Bridge in Maryland?
Yes.
It's very long.
It's very long.
I don't like it.
Yeah, it's not, like, my favorite thing would be just be, like, on top of the solid land all the time. But I would take a long bridge over a long tunnel 8 days a week.
Okay, fair enough.
And with that... What? You didn't like that? You thought it was too abrupt of a transition?
No, I just, like, didn't realize we were finished, but I guess we are. So... And with that...
We'll be back in no time at all. We gotta be real.
Be real, right? I saw it too.
Okay, anyway, yes. So her grappling with the murder that she's done is great for consequences of time travel purposes.
Mm-hmm.
It's really stressing me out.
Why are you letting it stress you out? Just turn your phone over.
Okay.
Or make it go dark. It's gonna be fine if you don't have a be real right now.